Blog Talk Radio.
But thank you for pointing it out. That's an expression of your love. I didn't know.
just can't get over losing you. So if I seem broken in two, walk on by, walk on by, foolish pride, that's all that I have left. So let me hide the tears and the sadness you gave me. You put the hate on me, you socked it to the mountain. When you say goodbye, so please walk on by. Oh, mama, make believe you never seen a silver cry. So I'm begging you to walk on by. Oh, yeah, and make believe you never see the silver cry. I'm begging you to walk on by. Make the vegan never see the tears of cry.
Oh. Okay, welcome to the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club. I'm your moderator and our host, Charles. And I have my lovely wife on the wheel of steel. Say hello, Jalavit.
Hello, Jalavit.
All right. And we're back with we're featuring Amos Wilson's lecture series, The Falsification of African Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
This is the third part, and the subtitle is The Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy. And we're in the first lecture. First part of this was part three of the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're in European Historiography and Oppression Exposed, an African Analysis and Perspective. And last week we discussed history as psychohistory, that is basically the psychological history and profile of a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And this week we are going to begin with his presentation on language and power. All right, I hope they got their copies of this lecture out. I know many of the book club members already have a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're new to the program, hopefully you'll go out and visit your nearest Afrocentric bookstore, or you can find African bookstore online and get a copy of this book for less than $20.
Mm-hmm. Or even check your library.
Yes.
It may even be in your library. Dr. Amos N. Wilson, The Falsification of African Consciousness. And there's a subtitle too, right?
Yes, Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy.
All right.
Do we have any special, book club members on the line?
Yes, we do. We have some people holding, and we have no one with their hand up, though, no.
Okay.
We do have some people waiting, you know.
Okay. And y'all thought, any members that you recognize? Okay.
I see Mr. Kenny. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. How y'all doing? How you doing?
We're doing great.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Okay. Yeah. You're welcome.
Okay.
All right. Okay, y'all ready to begin? All right. We're on page 22 of the lecture. And we're in discussions, his presentation of language and power. Okay, he says, when we get ready to create revolution, we must redefine the world and redefine words. There's no way around it. In Genesis, we see Adam being given the power to name things. Through being given the power to name things, he is given dominion. There is a connection between naming and dominion.
Mm-hmm.
Between naming and bringing into reality. When we permit another people to name and define, we permit another people to gain dominion and control over us.
Mm-hmm.
The languages that people learn and speak are most frequently directly related to the power relations between them. Many people would now learn Japanese as for a while they learned Russian, and as for a while they learned German, Latin, and etc. Why? Because the people who speak or spoke those languages were or are in ascendance or in power or at this or that time. There is no good English or bad English, or good language or bad language. There is language that is connected to power. People tend to learn first after their native tongue, whatever language is spoken by the people in power. There's a connection between the capacity to have other people speak your language and to call things by the names you give them, and power. If we wish to assume power, then we must assume the capacity to name and define things.
Mm-hmm.
The psychology of a culture is, to a great extent, a symbolic precipitant of the kinds of experiences forced upon a group of people by their history. We must recognize the intimate relationship between culture, history, and personality. If we do not know our history, then we do not know our personality. And if the only history we know is other people's history, then our personality has been created by that history.
Mm-hmm.
We must recognize that in the case of European history, it is not so much that we know European history because 90% of us don't know European history and have not read it, but that we are left with some image of it, some residue of it, that we have a sense of it. Is all the hegemonic European needs to begin to dominate and control non-European peoples. Anybody have anything to say about that?
Well, aside from the fact that their history, most of it is made up any daggone way. But I was going I did want to go back to what you were talking about naming and dominion.
Right.
That is very, very integral, because I also think about how we don't like to, defer to our scholars for information, whether it be through classification, naming, or even just not of things, but just of ourselves, when many of our scholars try to address our psychological issues, not unlike Dr. Wilson or Dr. Welsing, or these other people who have made these observations through their studies, through their experience. You see, and they are able to say, okay, this is a situation or circumstance, I'm going to name that, and, this is now a condition. And I've seen this in particular. You and I have spoken about this before. And we will not show deference to our own scholars. We will not do that. We still acknowledge, because, you see, domination and captivity, passive, submissive, whatever the situation, is grounded in faith and belief.
Right.
You see, and so they have the power because we believe they do. We've given it to them because we believe that it's rightfully theirs.
Right.
And so we're not allowing our own selves to blossom and to flourish. And to manifest so that we can begin to name and thereby take dominion, as we should do, as we should be doing, even in our own neighborhoods. I think that we even shun, and you and I differ on this topic, Ebonics. We'll say, instead of looking at Ebonics as a language, it's a language, whether it be an adulterated English or what have you, because, you have those types of adulterated languages like Yiddish and, which is, an adulteration of a couple of, you know, different languages, and then you know, Hebrew and others. But the point is, we have established a type of language, but we shun that. Even if you say, well, in the workplace or whatever, you shouldn't do that for whatever reason, okay, because you are going to your captors for, you know, sustenance, so I guess you have to comply. But even in our own, you know, private place, there are many of us who will shun our ability to communicate with each other in our own special way. And I'm saying that that idea of not taking the control over ourselves, I think, is steeped in our inability to mentally see our capabilities, and more importantly, acknowledging that we have every right and even obligation to do that, you know, to become more dynamic as a community.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, my views have somewhat, I'm not going to say, I'm not as hard, I guess, against Ebonics as I may have appeared to have been in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Because I spoke Ebonically in the 90s, as I speak now.
I think we all did at some point.
Or still do.
Right, or still do. But it's something that has to be hit. It's not embraced. It is looked upon as you are, you know, less than or whatever if you speak a certain way. But at the same time, these different talking styles, these colloquialisms that we use, some of which are even, you know, we've learned are ancient Hebraisms, things that are tied to very ancient languages that define our blackness. We brought that with us.
Right, I know you're talking about Ebonics is basically a pidgin, or English, or a Creole, like English, you know, that we have developed and we still develop in captivity.
Right.
Like it's like from the West
Coast.
Right. We develop it because we know we are a separate people and we are prone to express our uniqueness.
Right. But I'm saying we don't see that in a positive way. To me, that is a part of taking dominion of your community.
Right. But what I wanted to add to that, though, I think the problem that I had with Ebonics, and I probably still do, is that it had, or our Creole English, we have not improved it to a sophisticated level,
mm-hmm.
where we could really start defining more complex ideas using our own dialect or language, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so it did, because your language reflects your reality,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, and as Dr. Wilson indicates, power relationships,
mm-hmm.
and it only has been used in terms of powerlessness.
Right. So,
and I'm not saying you shouldn't use it. I'm just saying that was probably a problem that I had. I hadn't thought about it in a very long time, and. It needed, I think our Pidgin English, our Ebonics, need some refinement.
Right. We have a caller. Nana is on the line.
Okay. Hello, Nana.
Come. Hey, how y'all doing tonight? How y'all doing?
Good, good, good.
You all can hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. Come on.
Okay. In regards to Ebonics, I think the problem is that the language doesn't have any power. Meaning that we use English because it's pretty much the language of quote unquote power. Even though we are powerless people, those mm-hmm. who are in power, that's the language that is used, even by the Chinese, by the way. Ebonics does have a structural base. Malafi Asante has written extensively on it. I know that we tend to think that it's just some corruptor of English, but the problem is that in many African-based languages, you did not have words like could, should, would, things of those natures. So most of your African languages, the verb to be and those and the conjugations of that, that tends to be the basis of many of the languages. So when you don't have a could, should, and a would, well, how do you interpret that? So it's a lot more complex than saying that, you know, well, it doesn't have certain elements, because Ebonics really does have that. It's just I find more than anything else is that because it's not the language of power. And right now, we are a powerless people. So therefore, to have our own language, we need to have power. And once we are able to attain that power, then we will be able to implement the language of our own power, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. And I do understand what you're saying, and while I do appreciate that, I'm wondering, and maybe you can help me on this, because I know you are an educator. Would you say that even, because I don't really know the true Ebonic, you know, language or what have you.
Right.
But would you say that perhaps Ebonics, as an example, could be an exercise in the Dominion, which, you know, in context with what Dr. Wilson was just saying about taking that power, naming things, naming ourselves. Because, see, that's what the slave masters, as soon as you stepped off the ship, you got the name. They named you. Mm-hmm. That was taking possession of you, you see. And so if we are saying, yes, that is the language of power, and while I understand that, and it is exactly right, is it not an exercise in broadening our, I guess, ideals or concepts of our ability, in that we have developed this type of alternative communication for ourselves? While I don't speak it, I don't really know a whole lot, because I used to think, really, I just thought Ebonics was just a broken, just how black people just talk, kind of a little broken or whatever. But I understand that actually Ebonics is quite complex, like you were talking about. And what I'm saying is that not an exercise in us being able to see our ability to still be productive, to produce a language or a manner of communicating between just us that we understand?
The only dilemma that I see with that is the mindset of the people, meaning that there are people who are so bought into the system of racism, white supremacy, that they can't, they just can't see it any other way. So now it comes to the point where, who is it that we are trying to communicate with? Or are we trying to communicate with those who don't want to hear anything that we have to say? Or are we trying to reach those who do want to hear what we have to say in our own language, to create our own power? What's the easier road? So we can garner that power if we communicate with those who want to hear what we have to say. And I don't know if it's necessarily a waste of I think it's a waste of our time to try and communicate with those who don't want to hear us, if that makes any sense. So I think if we're able to start with that group and give, you know, that power and start naming and calling it by that name that we want to call it and or whatever, then yes, that is definitely attainable. But I think a lot of times we get caught up in trying to communicate with those who don't want to hear what we have to say, if that makes any sense.
Right. Gotcha. All right.
Am I still on? Am I on the air?
Yes.
I am. You can hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to chime in before we probably, you know, get out of the subject on the language. I wrote some stuff down. I noticed that, like, when it comes to the domination, what Charles was talking about and what you were talking about earlier about the domination of white supremacy on, you know, with the language and the use of words, I noticed that, like, when you look at the map and when you compare the countries or continents and cultures with each other, when it comes to white people who are interacting with these countries, he really imposed his language on Africa, you know, and on the Americas, really. And when you look at the Asia, you know what I'm saying, 9 out of 10 times you'll notice that he don't, you know what I'm saying, he really didn't impose his language on the Philippines, the people in Singapore and Pakistan. They have their own, you know, they have their own language. And but when you go like to Africa and everything, the French really did a good, you know, they did a big job, you know, even to where they turned it, they made their own language like part French and part African, which is like Swahili. And it was a good impression on it, even to a point to where I was asking my neighbor who's Ghanaian, and he's from the Ashanti tribe. He said, yeah, we speak African, but you can say these words in American letters. He said, you can actually say these words in American letters. I was like, well, how do you say Etisen? And he was like, yeah, you say it in a certain way, and if you spell it out, it would be E-T. And so I'm like, you American letters? I mean, like, what is the phonics or the phonics for, you know, African letters? You're like, we don't have our letters. You understand? But when you go, like, when you go to Japan, you know, they actually speak Japanese. And when it comes to, I want, as much as he is in Africa, I want to know, I would like to know have you ever seen a white person say, well, I speak African, well, I speak Nigerian, you know,
no.
Or anything like that. But he'll say in a minute that I speak Japanese, or I can speak Cantonese. You know, that's like real big to him and everything and stuff like that. So,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right, I know what you're saying. With that process, you were talking about the transcribing of a word from an African language into Roman, or you said American letters. That's about
right.
The writing, and they call that transliteration. Now,
mm-hmm.
You asked, you said, do they have their own, basically what you was asking, how do you write it in the native Ashanti language? That's what the question you asked the man, and
that's
he
right.
Didn't have an answer for you.
Right.
So, the issue is, under European occupation, with the writing systems of those people were not being passed on to lots of people in the nation. So that means that's why you see them talking about wanting to build more schools over in Africa, because they want to
right.
Teach the children to write, read and write in the European
right.
Language as opposed to in their own. They got their own writing systems, thereby alienating those indigenous people from their cultures,
right.
Making them less Ghanaian or less Ashanti. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
That's a part of the Borg assimilation.
Yeah.
We was talking earlier. That's how it's done.
Well,
you go.
Well, what is that language that that skill that people have? Like when you learn other a wide variety of languages. What do they call that? What occupation is that called? Again, do you know?
Yeah, you call it philologist.
Okay.
A philologist or a linguist?
Linguist, right. Linguistics. There you go. Linguist.
Philologist is more of a person, he's really into the reading and the writing and the speaking. He's a more, you know, but and a linguist is a person just, you know, he's just learned about a lot about lingo, mean tongue, you know, so he's just good at, it just means he's speaking. He catch, you know, speaks a lot of language. Not necessarily good at writing.
Okay.
That's right, the implication. But I have another Dr. Wilson's books, Development of Psychology, The Black Child, has devoted an entire chapter to language and communication in this book. And he said a lot of awesome things, but one of the most things, if you have a blessed to have a copy of this book, this chapter on language communication, he ends the chapter. I'm not going to even read a whole lot close, but what he basically tells you, there is no bad English, and it does not represent any kind of mental inferiority. That was his first recommendation implication concerning Pidgin English or Creole English, what we call Ebonics today.
Yeah.
And that's what Del was referring to when she was saying we ought to develop and refine our own dialect for everyday usage so that we can communicate with it and stop leaving it underdeveloped and therefore have it not being able to articulate and expand our understanding of reality. Because we treat it though it's inferior. Matter of fact, we allow the European and ourselves to refer to it as quote unquote broken English.
Okay. You know what I'm saying?
I'm offended. I was just saying that by saying that the dialect that black or African peoples in America speak is broken, is saying that the words, our tongue, everything that comes out of our mouth is broke. It, you know, our more comfortable dialect is broken. So in order to speak fixed or proper language or proper tongue, we have to speak the dialect of the European. So that's all I was saying.
And I wasn't so much saying that. I think really what I was trying to get at is like what I was saying to Nana about the exercise in, to me, that's a part of the steps toward domination, or what she is calling, I think we're saying the same thing,
yeah.
Calling it power.
Yeah.
And that's what dominion is. It's taking power back. And I was just saying, like, maybe is that tool an exercise in, you know, not just, because prime example, people, and this is not to say that people should not rename themselves and that kind of thing, but we see people look down upon others when they have their quote-unquote slave name, right?
Okay.
And then, you know, you don't have your African name and this sort of thing. Okay, so then I get my African name, but then if I have no real power, even though I've renamed myself, does that mean that naming myself was the wrong thing to do? Well, of course not. Because that is an exercise, but I think, like she was saying, if you are headed in that direction, if you seek power, and I think I'm trying to say, I'm dealing with people of like mind who seek to, break the power of the system, and who do seek to obtain power for our community, for our nation, and in those situations, I think that it is a step. In naming yourself and gaining,
well,
you know, almost taking the power, taking, you know, ownership of yourself.
Right.
Okay.
You know, back into yourself.
Right. But Jolovic, right? If you go to YouTube, you can go to YouTube and punch in Maroons, the Maroons of Jamaica. And if you can catch this clip, one of the ways that they came up with Patois and Creole in Jamaica. The lady was explaining, who was a Maroon that was living up in the mountains, she explained that language came about with trying to disguise what they was trying to say, you know what I'm saying, towards their subordinates, the masters. They didn't want him to understand what they were talking about. So this is why they twisted up with a little African, they sped it up with, you know, they sped the English up. And this is what she was saying. She was like, you know, we spoke fast, and we spoke this Patois and Creole because we didn't want him to understand what we were saying when we were, you know, trying to raise up against him. You know?
Right. And that's power.
Right.
And
when you can even think that. And you can even think that.
Yeah.
Right.
That's basically the sum up of, you know, what was, you know, like you can punch it in YouTube if you can catch it. It's called The Maroons Up in Jamaica. The Maroons.
Right. Okay.
And I'm going to add this other comment. Dr. Wilson, he mentioned about the problem that we have in our society about Ebonics. He says, all too often teachers tend to overreact to the tendency of the black child to translate standard English into his own vernacular. Or they tend to see this translative behavior as an indication of ignorance and or of cultural deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times y'all, my parents are school teachers, and most of my people, my family, from 1920s on, they thought that if you didn't speak that quote unquote King's English, you were speaking some kind of gibberish. They don't respect the like Java, you were saying how you've been talking, how your ideas about Ebonics and mine was that we haven't developed it.
Right.
And Wilson just talked about that in his book, about it being under refined.
Right.
That is a problem.
That's what she was was just saying, that it's not under defined, I think.
No, I'm saying under refined meaning that we haven't used it and applied it, added words, expanded the vocabulary.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm talking about when I'm saying refining the vocabulary. You got to refine it to, you expand it and it grows.
Right.
When you just use it only to communicate just some basic mundane ideas, and, you know, then you have to resort to the language of the oppressor to communicate more complex or different kinds of ideas, then, you know, that means more of the people in our, who are quote unquote educated in our society, have to use the pidgin or Creole or Ebonics and improve upon it. And if we're not using it, because the so-called educated people don't want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, we're going to use the Kangs or standard English. That shows my education, meaning that the European has educated me well and meaning that I don't value my blackness. My education is synonymous with alienation from black vernacular. And so that's what I'm saying. We have to overcome that kind of view so that we can take on our own vernacular, our own language,
mm-hmm.
as you were suggesting years ago. But we're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll return to this lecture series, and we'll continue on with his section of the lecture on history as mythology. You just stay tuned, and we'll be right back after these messages. Listen in to African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
Black in public, black out loud, and black on purpose. For some, it's where your deprogramming begins, and it's where others on the path come for fellowship. Come on in and kick your shoes off. Visit us at www.facebook.com/blackinpublic. Put your fist in the air, y'all, because we're going to keep it black.
I'm Eric Teamer, host of Common Sense Conversations. Join me every Tuesday and Friday when I put common sense where it ain't so common. That's Common Sense Conversations every Tuesday and Friday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, 3:30 Pacific. Common Sense Conversations on blogtalkradio.com. According to Henry David Thoreau, a man is rich in proportion to the number of things that he can afford to let alone. With that in mind, we find our people locked in a permanent cycle of poverty, especially those who mistakenly believe that they somehow have arrived, only a paycheck from foreclosure. Although we find black incomes at an all-time high, we still lack wealth, and we also lack the understanding of the purpose of wealth, which is safety, growth, and security. But it's not hard to turn this around. It will first require us to take a look at the bigger picture, and also it will require us to stop flossing. We have to understand that that $10 that we waste every day equals $300 a month. The same $300 that you find yourself missing every month. The same $300 required for you to invest into your family, into your community, and into your nation. Please join us on Facebook, African Money.
Welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there. Join us for the sweetest show on internet radio, Honey Soul Radio, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Join your hostess, the Honey Diva and Miss Lady P, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Honey Soul Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Now add a little honey to your flavor.
Welcome back to the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club, where we are featuring Dr. Amos Wilson's lecture series entitled The Falsification of African Consciousness, subtitled Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy. We just wrapped up the section of the lecture on language and power, followed by a brief discussion, and I promised to pick up on page 23 on history as mythology, but that section is extremely long, and I think we wouldn't be able to do it justice by me attempting to cover it and try to read it. So I think we'll just save that one for people to read at their own leisure. We'll pick up on page 31, where we'll discuss, read, and we'll recite the read of history and societal amnesia on page 31. And we'll probably see if we can maybe handle another section after this. But here we go, page 31. History is a time dimension. History structures time. I frequently try to point out that culture is not only about behavior, dress, and so forth, but that all cultures have a time dimension related to them. I talk about this relative to the education of our children to indicate that our children are often flunked and destroyed by the time structure of the schools they attend. Who told us that classes have to be at least have to last 45 minutes? Oh, the white folks teach that as 45 minutes. But that apparently is a time system that is connected to and works for them. That is in some way intimately connected to their history and experience. When we look at ourselves, are we going to tell ourselves that our children are destroyed by the after effects of our enslavement, Jim Crowism, miseducation, poor self-image, all the other things we moan and groan about, and yet we don't make time in a curriculum for instructing them so as to remove these obstacles to learning? If not, then we will destroy them. Therefore, our time system for teaching our children cannot be a duplicate of the European time system. We must recognize that there is a time dimension related to our history and ourselves as a people. In knowing our history, we get to know our time dimension. We get to know how much time it takes to be dedicated to various tasks if we are to achieve what we need to achieve. Forget about other people's time. Who gives a hoot about whether our children are reading ahead or behind white children? Who told us they had to read the same thing, at the same time, at the same age? If they have a different history, a different experience, different goals, and different ways, then doesn't it stand to reason that they may be achieving different milestones at different times? But it's the very fact that we try to impose the time system of another people upon our own children that creates the so-called deviations that we complain about so much, and our children are destroyed in the process. So when we let another people write history, and history is an arbitrary division of time, they define us within that division of time. So we see European history talking about World War I, World War II, etc. That's not the way we divide up time in terms of wars. No. We have been at war with the Europeans continuously for the last 2,000 years, a non-stop war.
Mm-hmm.
When we internalize European divisions of time, it takes away from our own history and from our own understanding and our own adversarial relationship with them and other people. And it takes us completely outside of ourselves. Therefore, history as mythology, even if it tells the truth, by the very fact that its constructing of time, its structuring of time can still be used as propaganda to manipulate and create unreality in consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
European history, to a considerable degree, attempts to control consciousness by the way it is presented. We saw a movie called The Birth of a Nation. Why not Death of a Nation?
Mm-hmm.
Indigenous Americans, so-called Indian nations, existed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we speak of the birth of some nations. Other nations were dying. But we are focused on their so-called birth. even more pernicious than this is the fact that many of our people feel as if they do not come into existence and self-consciousness until they have been recognized by European historians. So Columbus discovers America, and it's almost as if the Indian comes into reality and into self-consciousness as the result of Columbus's so-called discovery. Before that time, they were nothing, dead. And many of us still have that deep psychology that we are invisible people until white folks recognize that we exist. It's a heavy psychology that rules us today. We are not famous until they make us famous. We are not anything until they make us something. Before that, we are nothing. So history as propaganda, history as mythology, creates and brings into consciousness. History by European is seen as a validation of truth. It establishes authority. It's a puzzling situation, as I've often pointed out to my students, that we use as arbiters of truth those who have lied to us most. These are the kinds of contradictions that keep us crazy. And they are widespread. Consequently, we can only feel its truth when it comes out of a European historical mouth solely. That's the end of that section.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what else can he say?
That's it.
He didn't put it down.
Mm-mm. How do you, what do you tag onto that? Amin is on the line.
What's up, Amin?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up?
What's up? Yep.
You say that. He's establishing reality.
Right. I remember when I was doing my researches on the birth of white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was checking out Daniel. They talked about the rise of Greece, you know, and the Grecians and the Romans were like the first European nations to begin to conquer. And we don't hear about all of their technological and cultural developments. All we know is that they came on the scene, Greece and Rome, kicking butt, conquering cities, Greece going east, the Italians going west. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Moving lots of and trying to dominate successfully black folks, African people.
Mm-hmm.
Africa or in the east, or Asia, which means lands of the sunrise. That's why we talked about in the earlier section about the dividing time based upon wars. He says we've been at continuous war with the Europeans for the last 2,000 years, a little longer than that. But it's about, I've timed it like 2,300, 2,400, but he's correct. He's on the money. Amos is right. He knows this. And we have not looked at our condition as a part of a continuous series of aggressions by Europeans. We, as he stated, he said, we are looking at the vision of time that is history from their point of view, their perspective. Basically, that's assimilating with them and alienating from ourselves, which is what he said. He said we look completely outside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, history as mythology, even if it tells the truth. See, this is what he's saying. Just because, okay, so what? A war happened a certain period of time, so many years from another event. It's mythology, according to his argument, because the structuring of time is propagandizing, manipulating, and distorting reality for you. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because it messes up your ability to process reality, and so it doesn't matter if an event happens, it's the way it's presented.
Right. And accepted and believed.
Right, right. So anybody have any thoughts on that they'd like to interject on that section on history and societal amnesia.
That's just like I was thinking while you're speaking, how long does it really take to create a boy and turn him into a man, or to create take a young girl and turn her into a woman? Same way you talk about the hours or the minutes in the classroom, or the hours in a school day. How long does it really take to create to? I mean, what are you doing in school? You're taking a child, and you're you know, building them up to be an adult. So how long does it take to be an adult from being a child? We're going by their standard.
Even
they
you
say 18 years old, but is that something that just fits their program, or does
you're
it
right.
fit ours?
It is their program. You ask that question, good. It may be considered rhetorical by some, but some ancient texts I've been able to look at, that they claim to be able to initiate males from boys to men roughly between the ages of 13
mm-hmm.
and 15.
Mm-hmm.
They've been able to, you know, basically a male would undergo his social initiation, which means he's being initiated. He's being taught how to you know, the rudiments, the basic rudiments of warfare, hunting. He taught that really as younger than that, but he learns to become, you know, good at it. Survival training. That means, you know, learning how to live in by himself, survive, you know, building a structure to provide shelter. He learns those basic survival skills, so he can basically he can learn how to live, how to forage his own food, how to, you know, live in the wild off locusts and honey, and, you know, how to get honey out of tree. You know, I know the kids learn at young age, but they learn to refine that, and then that's what white supremacy. They had the Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
Boy Scouts is a manhood training program to thrive in white supremacy.
That's right.
That's what the Girl Scouts is. It's a womanhood training program for women who are under white supremacy. That's what it is. Now, do we have a Black Scouts? All people, Dr. Kwanzaa Kanjufu, they run a male development program for boys. And, you know, I don't know what the name of it is, but...
And Africa does, too.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of Africa?
Yeah.
Okay. And there are a few others who have various types of programs like that, but, you know... I'm going to say that type of thing, you know, has to become more uniform, where we're looking from our own cultural perspectives, where we are preparing people people, the males in our community, in our families, with the traumatic fact. A lot of the grown men, including myself, need some of that same training, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We all, I mean, many of us have, some of us got it in the military, but we had to go get it from, or we got it in Boy Scouts. Some. A lot of black people went to Boy Scouts, or they went to the military to get that training, or they may join a Masonic lodge to get that kind of training that their community doesn't have, independent of white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make it right, right. So, yeah, it can be done as an adolescent male, whatever adolescent means, because, you know, we know they came out with these terms, teenage, adolescent, hell, you know what I'm saying? But yeah.
But you're right. Am I still on the air, Charles?
Yeah, you in there, man.
Right. You're right. He imposes his culture, you know, greatly, because, you know, when you look at the boy, you know, Obama just signed the bill for the Boy Scouts, for the gays to be in the Boy Scouts. You know that, right?
And I didn't know, but I knew that was coming, because, you know, he likes the fancy pants.
Yeah. they mentioned it on the news tonight. The gays and
this
stuff
is
like
where
that.
Where it always goes wrong.
The trick behind that is, like, it's Boy Scouts, but gays can be in it. But it's Boy Scouts. And before that, like, on another subject, the way we used to organize our culture as far as the teaching is concerned, the boys and the girls would be taught separately. And everything, like, they, you know, like,
that's,
you know,
right.
The African approaches it, the boys, you know, the women in one bracket and the boys in another bracket. But now, you know, when it came, as far as European education is concerned, as a matter of fact, he started out with that first, you know, also too, you know, like being separate, but now he has co-ed, you know,
right,
like co-ed and stuff like that. And then when you look at cutting hair, he cuts his hair, but in, like, certain, like, you know, Sikhs in New York City. And Jamaicans, like the Rastafarians, they have to cut their hair to get certain jobs. We have to cut our hair to get certain jobs.
That's right.
And last but not least, when you look at the uniforms, And when you looked at the Arabs, if you compare the Arabs today from, you know, from the 1980s or the 70s, they always used to wear like a garb or a robe now. But when you look at the Arabs of today, they're wearing suit and tie. They don't wear diehard Muslims, but they wear suit and ties now. The European So expand on it.
Yeah, they assimilation, man. Everybody done punked out, done bowed out to that European power. You know, they scared them all, and they took their turbans off. You know,
right.
Make a living, whatever. He said, okay, I got to get rid of these. Instead of us band together, creating our own economy and saying, you know what, we ain't finna compromise with these people. What we're going to do is we're going to create our own dynamic. We're going to bring, say, our own products or whatever in from the Caribbean. We're going to start buying and selling with each other. They could have boxed the European out, created their own culture, just like the Arabs you speak of could do. But see, they all... feeling, the ones that's over here or whatever, they feeling that European. They ain't trying to alienate themselves from him. They say, okay, Master Charlie, I'll put on the suit. I tell them all my friends put on the suit too. And if they don't, we gonna treat them like they old fashioned and get them up out of here. Let you carry them off to Cuba or somewhere, you know. And everybody start getting right, start finding themselves a tailor, and going to the men's warehouse.
But it's all about the power, just like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
It's all about that power and domination. There's certain things that we, you know, are going to have to do because we are under the dominion of these people.
Right.
And even though we like to say that we're not, we like to say, you know, that we're not, you know, we haven't been victimized or what have you, it doesn't matter because if you're not able to express yourself culturally, then you have been dominated.
That's right.
It's just that simple.
You can't express your culture without having to say, okay, I got my hand. You braided my hair, right? You know that?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know when I go out my house with my dashiki, it's gonna go down. I'm gonna get in front of why he going down. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, he got it because you
can barely have your hair braided, but don't wear nothing non-European. Wear some non-European. See what happens. You see what I'm saying? Match with my Hebrew my T-shirts with messages on it. What that is you got on? You know what? Hey, you're moving too far away from Mr. Charlie now. You need to come a little closer. What that guy, my mechanic, told me back in the day, he said, you ain't even much American no more.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? He's a black guy.
Oh, you show is acting free. You show is free. Wait.
I was at that one relative friend from dad, and I was telling about my business or whatever I was doing. They say, oh, you trying to be free.
Yeah.
So this is an older black lady, about 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was just asking, oh, what you do, young man? I was like, no. Oh, she got right on it. Oh, you trying to be free. I see where you're going with this. That's what that bid is you got. That's why you ain't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Be free. We're going to catch you.
And it was contempt.
Oh, it was contempt.
It wasn't. It wasn't. It was contempt.
Them,
like, how dare you?
Them Negroes.
You think you live.
That's right. They see you coming. They already know what you're doing, but you think, oh, I think I got to explain the details and ramifications of white supremacy and the politics of domination.
Mm-mm, no, you don't.
So when you walk in the room, they already got you. Oh, I can see what that nigga is. Mm-hmm. I got you. Who got an eye on you, buddy? You better not step across that line. We got your ass.
But what about that, going back to the troop leader, though? Can you go on and tell that story, Brother Mean?
The troop leader, yeah. Tell us about the troop leader.
The scout.
What's our troop leader?
Right.
Oh, yeah. He told the kid, I'm going to show you the little magic creek down here. And so he walked on down in the woods, and they were walking for a little while. And then the kid looked up at the troop leader, and he says, well, you know, it's getting dark out here, and I'm getting kind of scared. He says, well, you're getting scared. I got to walk all the way back by myself.
Holla.
Right. Hey, I remember back, they was back in the 90s, they were talking about early the 2000s, whatever. They were talking about all these troop leaders was getting busted for molesting kids.
Yep.
Them stories, they stopped talking about it, but they ain't went away. They still raping, molesting kids right now.
That's right.
And now they done finally sanctioned it. It was already sanctioned it unofficially.
Well, Super President has made it, you know, open that doorway, you know, for that to be acceptable, you know, behavior in more of these government-sanctioned, you know, re-education camps. However, I think that we can never forget that their highest aspiration is that man-boy love.
You know what? That's what they really want. And we got to come up with a name for Obama. What we going to call him? We come up with a nice, catchy nickname that is most insulting and extremely hilarious.
Get that in our private time.
I mean, we just got to do that so when we use it, it's like a...
like a code name. And let's do it on the air so that everyone knows.
Brainstorm that right now.
You're so funny. Okay. I think we're done. Are you done?
I want to employ the word super in it.
Like that too.
Anybody got anything to add with super? Super go. I mean, come on. I know you're good at coming up with names and things. Come on. We got to control these people. We got to name their leader.
I got that's too long for time.
What did you say?
You said you got to
come. That'll take time.
All right, we'll come up with something.
That'll be our homework assignment for the book club.
There you go.
Yeah, come up with a
funniest son name gets a prize.
Okay, the funniest name for the president gets a prize.
There you go.
All right, and you better call him President Obama, or else.
And I hope some people call in to be angry with us. It's what I want.
Oh, confrontational. Book club always ends this way. What?
Oh, well, the hate is out there. And I got some hate to catch.
Don't nobody hate you. Don't nobody hate you. Ain't nobody studying your job.
Okay, maybe not.
All right.
All right. I guess that's it. I guess I'm all fresh out of ideas.
Okay.
I'm starting fights. That's when you know it's over.
It's over.
All right, well, we'll catch you next week.
All right.
On for the part four
mm-hmm.
of this of the presentation of the False Case African Consciousness lecture series. And we'll pick up on the consequences of historical amnesia on page 33. So it'll be awesome.
All right.
Oh, so
gonna go back.
The show's ending now?
Yeah,
it is. It's been an hour. Can you believe it?
Yeah,
that was quick.
Two hours, man, is exhausting. I don't like 2 hour shows. But all right.
Yeah.
You got to get out of here, man.
An hour already.
You got to live, right? Peace.
It's been an hour. All right. Appreciate y'all coming. Until next week, same time, same bat channel.
Yeah. She probably got some. She going to roll some jam on there or something. Y'all can listen to that while you're doing whatever you're doing.
Don't listen to no jam. They get the hell on out of here.
Okay, then.
All right.
All right,
I'll holler at y'all next week. Peace.
Right. See you. Come on.